Hey, this is tennis legend Andy Roddick, and you're listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a guy who's definitely been served more times than I have.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. I am Dan Dunn. You're not, but you're listening, and I like that. And I thank you for joining us on this special episode. Today, we're going to be doing craft beer, and that's not something we do a lot on this show, but I'd like to do more of it. And joining me a little bit later in the show will be David Stein. Stein, that's an aptly named thing for a guy who makes beer, because, you know, they put him in steins. So David Stein makes Creature Comforts beer, and that's a brewery in Athens, Georgia. It's a small craft brewery that is making a lot of noise, and they're about to expand out to Los Angeles. They're going to be building a brewery and a brew pub in downtown LA that's scheduled to open next summer. Hopefully that's going to happen. Going to be talking to David in just a little bit. But first, very excited to introduce our new, we just brought on a new East Coast Bureau Chief Beer Division, East Coast Bureau Chief Beer Division, and her name is Cece Betzel. Cece, welcome to the team.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
You are a beer aficionado, I would say an expert, but you shy away from using such lofty terms as experts. But you know beer, right? You know your beer.
I know I enjoy beer. I have a lot to learn, but yeah, sure.
Okay. So we're excited to get into some beer talk with you, but I do want to mention to everybody that November 3rd is election day here in the United States. I just voted today. I early voted. I got a sticker on my shirt right now. Cece, you've voted as well?
I have.
Great. Awesome.
Absentee ballot though, but that's okay.
That's the vote's a vote. And so I just want to, you know, this is the part where I encourage everybody, no matter who you're voting for, get out there on November 3rd and vote for Joe Biden. All right. So that's what I want to say. I don't want to get any more political on this show than that, other than to say, get out. And but again, the key isn't who you're voting for. It's just that you vote. And when you vote for Joe Biden. Okay. Now let's get into beer, because I think beer unites us all. Whatever, left, right, red, blue, we all like beer.
Everybody likes beer.
And there are different styles of beer. And because we haven't talked about beer much on this show, I kind of wanted to lay the groundwork for people that might not know about the different styles of beer. And Cece does know. So Cece, enlighten us. Us. I know everything already. You know that. But the listeners out there.
All right. I'm going to quiz you after.
Absolutely. I'm taking notes. So let's. What are the basic types of beer right off the bat? There are two basic types, right?
Correct. So beer basically falls into two main categories. You have your lagers and your ales. And the difference basically comes down to the yeast. So a lager is used or made using bottom fermentation. So the yeast basically settles at the bottom. It's a little more fragile, shall we say, and has lower tolerance to alcohol. And then your ales use top fermentation, so that yeast settles at the top. And that's where you get a little more of those funky flavors. And then if you want to get a little more specific, you do have the spontaneous fermentation, which is just wild and crazy. And that's where you get your sours and that kind of stuff.
Okay, nice. All right. Could a person, like, how does spontaneous fermentation happen? Could you just, like, is there just liquid sitting there and suddenly it just...
It's in the air. The yeast is in the air.
The yeast is in the air. Okay. So that's the basics. Now, when we have different styles of beer, and that's what I'm going to be having different stuff. So for instance, last night I tried some of Creature Comfort beer, and I had an IPA, and I had a Pilsner, and then I had a triple IPA. So, but there's a lot more out there. So let's start with, say, What do you want to start with? A Pilsner?
All right, well, let's start with lagers.
Okay.
Which your Pilsner that you tried falls into that category. So with your lagers, you got your pale lagers, your dark lagers, your Pilsners, German style Bock. But I would say the most popular common beer style is the pale lager. So that's where you got all your Budweiser, Coors, that kind of light, crisp, refreshing. It's a good like kind of intro beer. Everyone, you know, has had a Bud at some point, I would assume.
Bud.
And then your Pilsners, which, yeah, I really enjoy, very European style. And that, a lot of it comes down to the water, which is 90, 95% of the beer is water. And everywhere you get water, there's different properties. So a Czech Pilsner tastes the way it does, a little more sort of bitter because of the water that you can find in the Czech Republic, or Czechia, as it's now called.
Well, I think, is it because they're peeing in the water in Czech Republic? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that is a well-known
fact. The Czechs are notorious for peeing into the water sources. So that's why you get your bitterness.
Please don't be offended. So that's basically your lagers. And then with the ales, that's where you get your IPAs, your pale ales, an amber ale, the stouts and porters. So you got a little more variety of flavor there, I would say.
What's thicker, a stout or a porter?
A porter is usually a little more chocolatey, and a stout is a little more like coffee style.
What do you like? Are you more of a lager person?
I like hoppy beers. I'm a big IPA fan. So I was actually looking at Creature Comforts, and they have a few hazy IPAs, which I really like.
So what does that mean, hazy IPA?
It's basically, you're going to have a little bit of a, like a creamier mouthfeel, shall we say. It's usually got a lot more kind of like fruity, tropical notes. They're usually pretty high alcohol. Well, I mean, all IPAs are. American IPA. So if you want to get into IPAs, that's a whole.
So just the category itself, IPA, it means Indian Pale Ale.
India Pale Ale.
India Pale Ale. What does that mean?
They usually have, pretty high alcohol content. When people think about IPAs these days, they usually think about American IPAs. And so that's going to be like super hoppy, high alcohol content, etc. English IPAs are not as hoppy or strong. But from my understanding, this may be an old wives' tale, but this is what I've always been told, that IPAs were invented by the English when they were colonizing India, because the hops have they preserve longer. So when the English were traveling to India to, colonize.
Well, they were exploring.
They were exploring.
That's what happened, like just when the Spanish were exploring Mexico, and when the British were exploring North America, and then they said, we've explored it and we like it. I think we'll stay and you'll leave. Yeah, that's the nice way. So when the English were exploring India on their way to taking it, they had the IPAs.
Exactly. And they found that it lasted a lot longer with all those extra hops.
What about a Guinness? That's a stout.
That's an ale.
Okay. Shows you what I know.
A dark ale.
Spirits is my forte. Spirits and wine. Beer is not my, again, that's probably why we haven't done many beer shows on here. I used to drink a lot of beer when I was younger, and then I stopped drinking it. And I never really got down that well of knowledge of beer. So
I think it's a very quickly growing, maybe it's a little past its peak now. I don't know about that, but craft beer has really exploded. In fact, I have done some home brewing myself, which was,
how'd that turn out?
Quite the journey.
That must've been a lot of work for you, home brewing.
It was. The key is cleanliness. Mm-hmm.
You get any germs in there when you're home?
Yeah, also with ales, you've got, your wheat beer. So I would say the majority of beer is made using malted barley, obviously wheat. It's all very scientific.
It's all very scientific. I gotcha. Well, this has been very illuminating. I feel like now I can go into this conversation with David Stein and feel a little bit better about all of this. Is there anything you want to add, Cece, to this beer discussion before we bring David on?
I mean, I would just say drink what you like. Don't let anyone, you know, make you feel bad for liking a certain type of beer. It's the great equalizer.
Beer is. That's the thing. Yeah. It's going to bring us all together. All right. Well,
it is.
Our new East Coast Bureau Chief Beer Division, Cece Betzel. You've shed so much light on the subject. Thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you. And now I'm thirsty and I'm going to go get a beer.
The check's in the mail, by the way, for this segment. It's coming.
Oh, uh-huh.
I promise. All right. We're going to.
Happy to do.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to have David Stein from Creature Comforts Beer on, and you're not going to want to miss that because there's just a lot of beer going to be involved. Okay.
So, I'm so jealous. Has he sent you some?
Oh, I've been drinking it all day. Yeah. I'm
what's your,
you I'm said, 10 beers in. I've had a lot of them.
You said the double IPA is your favorite?
I like the Pilsner. I like the IPA. There's a bunch of them. There's a whole bunch.
Well, I got to see if they carry it anywhere in Brooklyn.
I'm sure I could arrange to get you some.
You have to ask him.
Yeah. Okay. Cece Betzel, thanks for joining us.
And, thank you.
We'll be back with David Stein right after this quick word. Folks, I've never admitted this on the show before, but I'm a guy. Yeah, it's true. And as a guy, I'm here to tell you that so much of our identity is wrapped up in our hair. That's why when we get into our 20s and 30s and start noticing the first signs of hair loss, it definitely feels like panic time. Thankfully, now there's Keeps, a simple and easy way to keep your hair. Treatments start at just $10 per month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. That's right, free. Go to keeps.com/drinking to receive your first month of treatment for free. Take care of your hair, and your hair will take care of you. Joining me now is the founder of a phenomenally successful craft brewery from Athens, Georgia. It's called Creature Comforts Brewing Company, and they just announced an expansion here to my hometown of Los Angeles. They're planning to open a new brewery and tap room next summer, 2021. We're all hoping that's going to happen right here, LA, in the Fashion District. That's downtown. And this is going to be the first time that Creature Comforts is expanding beyond their beloved home state of Georgia. And the man making that happen is with me now, David Stein. How are you?
I am good, man. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I'm excited, man. Anybody can make beer as good as you guys make beer. I want to talk to you. You sent me, thank you, by the way, Creature Comfort sent me a care package just full of all sorts of goodies. And I went last night to a barbecue place near here and I brought a bunch of different styles of the beer over there and had them. And boy, does that taste good with some ribs and cornbread and mac and cheese.
Yeah, typically barbecues and beer just makes good sense, doesn't it?
It does. So David, let's talk about you. You're brewing beer in college, right?
Yeah, that's kind of where it all began for me. I was in undergrad at the University of Georgia, and my roommate, he knew how to make beer, and he was a home brewer, and he taught me how to do it. I kind of spent 4 years as a hobbyist and just really getting into it. It became an extreme passion of mine, learning the process, doing it all at home. So I went through phases of time where I had hundreds of gallons of beer fermenting in my basement, and I would brew the wort on my back deck, and it's a full day process. And then it takes a couple weeks to ferment, and I've got all these ice baths because you try to control the temperature of your fermentation. And anyway, it's a really fun thing to do as a hobby at home. Plus you get free beer. I was in college, and that was obviously a big perk because I wasn't 21 yet. So, it was helpful for that.
Do you remember, do you recall the first beer you brewed? What style of beer did you brew?
I do. The first beer I did was a stout, because stouts are the easiest homebrews to make, because it's just so much bold, like rich, roasty flavors, and you can kind of cover up all the off flavors that might happen. So, I was a coffee stout, and I added way too much coffee into that first batch. It was honestly disgusting tasting, but it would get you pretty jacked up.
Okay.
So it's kind of fun. I learned
what would the alcohol content be on that first beer you made? About 12%.
Yeah, it was about 10, probably 10.5%.
What is the line, David? Like, when does it become undrinkable? How high can the alcohol content go for beer?
It's interesting. I mean, I think it depends. I think that there's 14% you can get up to there, and I would say it's definitely still a sellable product. People enjoy it, but what happens when you get that high? You get a lot of sweetness. You have to get a ton of sugar in there, and then it's just impossible to ferment it all away. So these high 14% stouts or you know, any kind of big, you know, big barley wines typically have a good bit of residual sugar in them. So just a matter of taste at that point. There's been some breweries that have done like ice distillation methods, which at that point, is it beer or what, to get it up to 40%. But then it seriously just tastes like a spirit. So, you know, I think my sweet spot is like for like a really good balance of flavor is anywhere between 5% and 8%.
Okay. So now we'll rewind. Now you're back, you're in college, you get out of college, and then sometime around, you know, 2014 is when you launched Creature Comforts. How did that come to be?
So yeah, I was, you know, spent 2005 to 2009 homebrewing. And then I got a job at the Brickstore Pub, which is really an amazing world-class craft beer bar in Atlanta. And I was serving, I was learning about beer, and I started sampling out my homebrew to pretty much everyone that walked in the door. And before I knew it, I had a lot of enthusiasm from people. And these are the people that come to Atlanta from other breweries, you know, people who know beer. So I really got a confidence boost when people would, you know, people I could trust would give me honest feedback, would tell me how they really enjoyed the product that I was making at home. And at that point really was when something clicked in my head as, you know, just a dreamer that I gave it a brand name. So I was like, instead of just me being like, hey, you want to try my homebrew? I was like, you want to try Creature Comforts? That Creature Comforts was a name that I gave my homebrew back then as I was sampling out just to start a brand. And slowly kind of had an underground following. And next thing you know, I'm having events at four or five different bars and restaurants around town, serving Creature Comforts and people coming. And
was there a moment though, David, where maybe one particular, so, you know, obviously there's a very vibrant, restaurant bar scene down there in Atlanta and Athens as well. Was there like maybe one person, a big chef or somebody that tried your beer and you went, oh yeah, they loved it, and you thought, I can do this. This can be my career.
Yeah. So real quick, I'm going to crack a beer, and it's always a good sound bite.
I think I'll join you in this beer. I'm going to open it. Is it, this is the Pilsner. Is it Bibo? B-I-B-O?
Bibo, correct. Yeah.
Bibo. I'm going to crack a Bibo.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorites.
Cheers, man.
So, yeah. Yeah, cheers. And I'm drinking I'm drinking Athena Paradiso. This is a Berliner Weiss with passion fruit and guava. It's very, very refreshing. So
I love a good Pilsner. I fell in love with Pilsner years ago with Pilsner Urquell, yep, which I believe was one of the first commercially available Pilsners, right? From Prague.
Yep, exactly. There's a resurgence right now in lager beer. So Pilsner, light lager, and a lot of craft breweries are starting to make more of it. And a lot of craft beer enthusiasts hobbyists are getting more into it.
There was a period of time where with craft brewing was a lot of heavy stuff, right? You were getting into the box and the stouts and the triple IPAs and all this other. And do you think that's a result of maybe people being a little bit more health conscious? Like, what is it that's driving the resurgence in lager?
I think it's an evolution of our palate. I think there was a time when craft beer was a little bit newer. You know, it's been around for decades. However, there was definitely a big spike in craft beer in America, and somewhere around 2010 ish. And all everybody wanted was as bitter as you can and as high alcohol as you can get. And that was the hot thing. But now, I think it's a little bit of palate fatigue, honestly. You don't want those crazy flavors anymore. And you start realizing there's a ton of beauty in beer when you focus on the nuance. And there's a lot of beautiful flavors you can get from hops. And really, those big, bold flavors just cover up some beautiful things.
Well, and I think it probably speaks to why have the wines of Bordeaux and Burgundy, the Sangioveses from Spain, why have those endured for so long, all those old world wines? The style hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. I think it's probably the best tasting. It's probably the thing that's most agreeable to people's palates. And while you want to try other stuff, I've certainly done that with beer myself, where I've tried, oh, that's really interesting. But I'm not going to sit down and what you would call a session beer, right? I'm not going to sit there and drink this chocolate coconut monstrosity that's 9% alcohol. I'm not going to drink that all night.
100%.
On any sort of regular basis, right?
That's spot on. And you look throughout history, and especially in Europe, they drink lager, they drink Pilsner, and they're drinking for a different reason. They're drinking for the human connection, to hang with their friends. And it's a big part of the culinary scene there. So when you're eating some heavier foods, you don't want heavier beer, and you want lower alcohol so that you can drink more for longer and not get too hammered. I mean, everyone ends up, you'll get hammered after a certain point if you drink a 12 pack of any beer, but I think it allows you to enjoy it more, and it's less filling too,
When you mentioned Europe, so obviously you were at the Brickstore pub in Georgia, but then you also did a little apprenticeship over in Scotland at Brewdog, which is a very famous Scottish brewery. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that informed your beer making?
Yeah, definitely. So as I was evolving, from the Brickstore, when I was, I was networking and doing my homebrew thing. And then I hit a point where I was like, I got to take the next step. And in 2010, there wasn't a lot of craft breweries out there relative to now. And it was really hard to find a job as somebody that didn't have any professional experience. And I got really fortunate. I applied for an apprenticeship position at Brewdog, where I paid my way and they put me up.
And where is Brewdog exactly?
A couple months. And
where is it exactly in Scotland?
So they're in right now they're, I think, in close to Aberdeen, and it's northern Scotland. But when I was there, they were in a town called Fraserburgh, which is almost as north of Scotland as you can get. It was a pretty dreadful place, very cold and miserable.
Like way up in the highlands.
Yeah. And I think this was actually like on the east. So like it wasn't like beautiful at all.
You didn't get any of that. Yeah. I mean, cause I'll say this, that one, the furthest place I've ever been in Scotland is Orkney, the island up there, mm-hmm. where Highland Park is. Did you ever get the chance to go up there?
I didn't know. And I just got into Scotch when I was there. So I got a bottle of Ardbeg behind me.
Oh,
and
peatiest.
I love, it's weird. I used to hate peaty Scotch. And I think from hanging in these bars with these Scottish folks and drinking it in their environment and them telling me, you got to drink this one. I was like, I fell in love with it. It was crazy. I used to, it's almost like Band-Aid-y kind of tasting. It has this kind of crazy smoky flavor from the peat moss, and I learned to love it. So now I drink Ardbeg.
Did the influence? Do you find that any of the Scotch influence works its way into the beers that you're making?
In a subtle way, I think we do an amber ale that we age it on some French oak spirals, And that really, the inspiration for that beer was like a deconstructed rye whiskey. So, you know, there's a lot of crossover with amber ale and certain maltier beers and the flavors you get from whiskey. You know, it's malty. They're made from, you know, obviously the whiskey is made from a mash. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Everybody needs to understand that every spirit starts off as beer. Okay.
Right.
You know, that's exactly. People need to understand that that's how that works. And then obviously it undergoes distillation and processes you're not getting with beer, but in its origin, we're talking about malt, we're talking about barley, where, you know, it's the same thing.
Exactly. And I love how we keep bringing up these questions and then I never finish my train of thought until we're talking about the next
That's because we're drinking, David. We're drinking.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, with BrewDog, I really learned, I was in a big production facility, and even though I didn't really know what I was doing, I was helping, I was apprenticing, but you see the flow, you watch people, you see the energy, you understand, like, okay, all the equipment and the trucks are showing up to pick up the beer. And, you know, so really the whole process, even though it has similarities to homebrewing, it's different equipment. It's a whole different operation than your backyard, obviously. So that was huge for me, was just getting like a visual experience and just being in a brewery for 2 months, was huge. And they offered me a job to stay. You know, I just wasn't feeling, that area of Northern Scotland. I'm a Georgia boy.
Sure.
I don't like cold
Couldn't
weather.
Couldn't be any more different than where you're from.
Yeah. And it worked out well. I got back. Right when I got back is when things kind of started coming together for me. I was introduced to a group of investors, very well-known chef in Atlanta, who's one of my early supporters who helped me.
Can you say who that is?
Oh, yeah. His name's Ryan Smith. And okay. He's the chef owner of Staple House, which is an amazing restaurant in Atlanta. And he's a tremendous chef and a great friend. And he helped me out. He introduced me through Hugh Atchison. He was working for Hugh Atchison.
Well, I thought you were going to say Hugh, because I know Hugh. He's a friend. He's been on the show before. And
Perfect. Yeah. Hugh's a big part of the story too, because this group of investors here in Athens, I was living in Atlanta at the time, but they wanted to put a brewery in this amazing building where we are in downtown Athens. And they reached out to Hugh because he's from Athens. He has his restaurant 5 and 10 here. And then Hugh reached out to Ryan, who was his head chef at Empire State South at that time in Atlanta. Ryan became good friends with him at the Brickstore Pub. Next thing you know, I'm meeting with these investors, introducing myself as David Stein from Creature Comforts Brewing Company with sell sheets. And I bottled a ton of beer and put labels on them and everything. So I presented myself as if I was a, you know, I have an existing brand and, you know, as I was legit, I mean, I told them I was still a home brewer, but I was like, look, this is the beer I make. This is this concept I'm working on. And they were like, they loved it. They loved the beer. They loved the brand. And I was extremely confident that I can be resourceful enough and partner with the right people, which I did, to go pro. And shortly after I signed paperwork with the investors, it took us about 3 years until we were actually open. So I got a head brewer job at a brew pub in Atlanta called Twain's. After Mark Twain, it's Twain's Brew Pub and Billiards. And I was the head brewer for a year. And that's really where I learned how to contract hops, because that's tremendous, you know, something that is critical to beer is hops. It's one of the main ingredients, but it's an agricultural thing. So you have to contract, and it's a whole thing. So I learned how to do that. I learned how to order ingredients from all the vendors and build a production schedule and make beer for a demand and make sure I was keeping track of everything and the processes and how to clean tanks. So it was a good stepping stone.
When you mentioned the hops, I always hear these stories about these guys that go on these pilgrimages to go find these hops that are, have you done anything like that where you've gone to the far ends of the world because you heard about this hops that's being, you know, made in Sweden or Switzerland or something. And have you ever done something like that?
I was extremely fortunate to go to Australia in March. And I was on a 2-week trip and for hop, what we call hop selection. So essentially we go during harvest, and harvest is once a year, and for hops, and we go and select the hops that we want to use. And once you contract a certain amount, you can select these acres, these plots that have the characteristics that you like. And so I got to go to Australia, and it was, the trip was cut short. March 13th was when
COVID shut it.
COVID times. I was about to get on a plane to Tasmania, which they grow hops in Victoria and then Tasmania. So I was literally a step through the gate, and I was like, I can't do this. I can't get trapped in Australia right now. And I went home, and that was unfortunate, but I had an amazing week. And we use a lot of Australian hops, and especially in Tropicalia, which is our flagship IPA, Galaxy is one of the primary hops.
So yeah, this is one of the things about Creature Comfort. So all your beers are getting great ratings. I went online, I looked at a lot of the reviews. People love them. So you've got your year-round offerings. You just mentioned the Tropicalia. Is that a seasonal, or is that a year-round?
That's a year-round. Okay. Yeah, we have Tropicalia. We have Automatic, which is a pale ale. We have Bebo, which you're drinking. This is our Pilsner. We have Classic City Lager, which is a lighter. Yeah.
By the way, I had that last night with the Memphis ribs. Oh,
perfect.
Man, what a perfect match. Yeah.
Yep. That's the beer I drink the most of. It's 4.2%. Just really, we call it good cold beer.
But
it's
then simple. you got some like this. Like I'm here looking at this one, which looks great. I haven't tried it yet. The Glamour Muscles. The triple IPA. So that's a seasonal thing, right?
That's what we would call a limited release. So we have our year rounds, which always available. They go out to distribution, and then we have these brewery only beers, which are brewed in a very smaller scale, brewery only for the most part. And that's where we innovate creatively. We can take risks. We can explore different styles. And so Glamour Muscles is a triple IPA that we made. It's about 10% alcohol and extremely hoppy, but also very balanced. So it's a fun style to make. Not too bitter and really, really tasty and kind of a fun label. Imperial Trapes. So that was a fun one too, because Tropicalia is our flagship, and it's what we call a bright beer. It's not hazy. It's crystal clear. And Imperial Trapes is essentially a hazy double IPA using the same hops as Tropicalia. As you probably heard, hazy beers are quite popular right now.
Who's doing your labels? Because I think that's important too. I mean, your labels really pop. Who's doing those for you?
We do them in house. So I wear many hats. One of them is I manage our artists. So I've been doing our branding and creative since we opened. And so we have two graphic designers full time, and a photo video guy, and so we do it all.
And how important is that, David? Do you think having a label that really grabs people's attention? I mean, does that work in the craft beer? Because look, I've seen most craft beers have cool labels, but do you find yourself looking at other brands and going, okay, what are they doing over here? All right, I got to try this. And
100%. It's become a huge differentiator now that there's 8,000 plus breweries. When we opened in 2014, it was something that breweries were starting to focus on more. It was an observation of mine. I'm very, I have a very judgmental eye when it comes to branding and packaging, and the way that packages make me feel. I think it's so critical. So you see with wine and other things, how they do pay attention to that. And then with beer, it was just a lot of very dated, almost like, almost like MS Paint, like, just really. And then now, and I'm not saying we started it, there was several other breweries that were starting to focus on the design of the label. And what we found was how tremendous, like the Tropicalia can design was and some of the other ones we do. And now it's huge. People gravitate to it and get excited about it. And you could take beautiful photos, pops on the shelf. I think it's huge, man. I think it's tremendous.
Let's talk now about California. California has sort of been one of the standard bearers for the craft brewing movement, right? A lot of the early, that are now well-established beers were craft with the same thing you were doing in Athens was happening out here, right?
100%.
Any of those that you would say that were inspiration for you?
Yeah, all across the board. California is the mecca, you know, for craft beer in America. And for me, this is not limited to these breweries, but, you know, Sierra Nevada, old school, but they're still so relevant and they're still killing it. And that's huge. They, you know, I think they started in the 80s and they're just amazing. And they do so much work for the industry. They put a ton of money into research and they're helping everybody out and leading the way still. Let's see, Firestone Walker and Paso Robles. They do amazing stuff. And they do a lot of wide distribution, but then they do insane limited release and barrel aged beers. And their brewmaster's incredible. And good friend. And then you go down to like a lot of breweries in LA that we've become friends with. And part of the reason why we wanted to go to LA and why we were spending so much time there was our friends at Highland Park and Modern Times.
Angel and, City, isn't that here too? Or
yeah, Angel City and
San Diego. And San Diego has a bunch of them too, a bunch of big ones. Was it Arrogant Bastard is down there? Is that?
Yes, Stone. Yeah.
Stone, yeah.
Yes. San Diego's like, within California, it's like that, you know, I don't know. San Diego seems like that's the, like the craft beer city within, and LA, you know, for the population, it's surprising, you know, it doesn't have, nearly the like kind of breweries per capita as San Diego or the culture, but it's there. And we've become really good friends with a lot of good brewers out there. And I can't wait to get out there and be amongst some of our you know heroes and some of the best, and it's a little intimidating, but you know, we're here in Georgia, and it's just, for me, it's such a cool move and a big monumental time in my career and our brewery to just be like, we're going to California, we're going to where it all started, and going to start something up, and hopefully we'll be successful, and if we do, that's a huge accomplishment. If you know, for us.
Well, how did it come to be? Was it, did you just look at the map and go, we're going to go there? Or was there any other circumstances that played into the move to Los Angeles in particular?
Yeah, it was a couple things. We're looking at how to grow. And one of our ways in which we wanted to grow is to kind of plant breweries in other cities. And, you know, a lot of breweries grow through distribution. And so they'll be like, you know, we have our Athens, Georgia brewery, and then we sell all that beer to, you know, to all the states from there. That model's not working quite as well. A lot of the breweries who are focused on wide distribution are competing with local breweries that make amazing beer. So what we wanted to do is figure out how can we remain local and grow. So planting breweries made good sense for us, and figuring out a way to do that in an authentic way. And this is our first one. So we were looking into, we were doing some data analysis on what city should we go to? And LA happened to be for, you know, we had our own, you know, parameters that we were looking into, and LA was in the top three. So it was on our radar. And we loved going out there and had all these relationships with brewers. And then this is where it all got really cool and kind of serendipitous, was when we got an email from Joe Russo's assistant. And Joe's the director, and him and his brother.
Avengers, right?
Yeah, exactly. They did a couple of the Captain Americas, and they did Infinity War and Endgame. And they filmed, they were filming Infinity War and Endgame in Atlanta. They're doing a lot of filming in Atlanta right now. And the people on set while they're filming the movie were bringing Tropicália on, you know, on set. And when they would get off work, everybody was drinking Tropicália, and Joe noticed it. And he was like, what the hell, what's going on with this beer? And he tried it. He told us, he said, I stopped drinking beer. He's like, too many calories. He was just like, I'm not a beer drinker anymore. I used to love it, but then he started drinking Tropicália and now he's a beer drinker again. And something about it, like, yeah, he just noticed, like, you know, he's an artist, he's a director, he's an entrepreneur. So when he notices a brand or, you know, a product that is making such an impact on people, it doesn't go unnoticed for him. So to the point where, and this is just, he's a kind, very kind man. And he reached out to us and invited us onto set. He wanted to meet us. He took us out to dinner and he was just really cool. And he's a very down to earth, amazing guy. And he just wanted to get to know us and wanted to learn more about our, who we are and our brand. And then, you know, long story short, he gave us a shout a little bit later. And he was, he opened up a film company called AGBA, a production company. And his offices are in the Fashion District. And in the downstairs of the building where his offices are, there's a perfect space for a brewery. So he reached out to us and he's like, hey, man, hey, guys, y'all want to open up a Creature Comforts here in L.A.? Right under my office.
So talking about, he doesn't want to, well, he knew COVID was up, so it's a pain in the ass to go to the grocery store. So mm-hmm. I'll just have the brewery right underneath my office, so I don't have to go. Yeah. It's perfect.
We'll pipe a tap just, tap line right up.
You can get one of those tubes that they had at the bank.
Yeah.
You just put that right up. Yeah. Go up to just, Joe needs an IPA. And by the way, just, everybody's listening out there. You keep hearing Davis keeps talking about Tropicália. That is an IPA, 6.6% ABV. There's very fruit forward IPA, right?
Correct. And yeah, all the fruit character comes from the hops, which hops are cool. You get tons of fruit character, and citrus and pine from all these different hop varieties. So yeah, we definitely were going for much more of a hoppy fruit forward, IPA versus a bitter IPA, which is a little more West Coast, and that was what was more common at the time.
Well, this Bebo, by the way, this is exactly the kind of Pilsner I like. It's crisp and dry. It's not, there's not, you know, sometimes you get a little bit of a sweetness in it, not with this one. This is the kind I like. And honestly, this does kind of remind me of Pilsner Urquell in a way.
Yeah. Well, that is primarily Saaz hops in there, and
That's what they're using.
It's the Czech hop, you know. So Pilsner or Kel, I don't know 100%, but I mean, I would put all my money on the fact that they're using Saaz hops in that beer. So yeah, that what we were going for was a very continental noble, which is what kind of you call those old school hop varieties that are more earthy, perfect for Pilsners, and yeah, that's what we were going for. It's definitely more of a Czech, German style, traditional Pilsner.
And that Classic City Lager, as I said, I had that. I mean, just a really easy drinking beer. What's your alcohol ABV on that one?
That's 4.2.
Okay. Yeah.
And that one's much less like hoppy. So Pilsners have a bitter bite to it. You know, they got some flavor to it. But you know, if you compare a Pilsner Urquell to a Miller High Life, you know, the difference in flavor to where, so that's almost the difference in flavor that we're kind of going for between Bebo and Classic City Lager, not to compare either of our beers to those beers, but.
Well, let me ask you that, David. I'll throw out a couple of big name beers and you tell me what you think of them. I mean, not to shit on them or anything, but I mean, like, I like a good Miller High Life every once in a while. What do you think of a Miller High Life?
I love it. It's funny. Okay. I'll drink a High Life anytime, but what I prefer over a High Life lately is either a Modelo or a Corona. Corona is weirdly, it's like my,
well, you're coming to California, brother. You better get used to drinking Corona, cause you're going to see a lot more of that out here than you're seeing in Georgia. How about a Budweiser?
Yeah.
Drink a Budweiser?
Budweiser's fine. Honestly, Budweiser's a touch sweet for me. Like you were saying. You get some of those beers that just finish a little bit sweet. I'll drink a Budweiser anytime though. If somebody hands me a beer like a Budweiser, I'll drink it. I wouldn't order it over a, like I'd rather order a High Life.
So how about one of the original craft beers, Sam Adams.
Yeah. Sam Adams, I love Sam Adams as what for what they've done for the industry, and they do a lot for craft beer, but I never drink their beer. I don't know. It's nothing against them. I can't remember, so it's hard to, I just can't speak to it because I haven't had one in so long.
And then you see some of these ones that are coming up like Goose Island, you know, I could see that sort of success happening for you guys. You know, I didn't hear about Goose Island and then all of a sudden they were everywhere.
Yeah. The issue with Goose Island for me is that they were bought by AB InBev, and maybe I shouldn't care. Maybe it's a weird thing when a brewery, when a craft in an independent craft brewery gets acquired by AB or Miller, it's a weird vibe. And it's most other industries, you build a successful company and you sell it. It's celebrated. That's the American dream, right? And then but with craft beer, a lot of your consumers will shun you if you do that.
All right, I'm going to throw out two beers, and you tell me of the two, which one you would prefer to drink. We'll just go through. Ready? Mm-hmm. Pabst Blue Ribbon or Keystone Light?
PBR, for sure.
All right. How about a Modelo or a Corona?
Corona all day. Okay. I love the skunkiness.
All right. Coors Light or Bud Light?
Ooh. That's kind of a toss-up, but let's just go with Coors Light because they have that cool blue can that changes color.
And finally, Heineken or Stella?
Ooh. Let's go with, can I choose Peroni?
Yeah, I love a good Peroni. Now, I'm going to say this, though. I do like Heineken.
Yeah, Heineken's fine.
I think it's because when I was a kid, I'm talking about a teenager, so when I... Yeah, you know, not like I was only slightly underage. That was kind of the first. Now again, I'm older, so there were no like Heineken was like that was the best beer you could have. You know, you're getting a Heineken, you're doing this. And then I remember, I guess I don't know if you call it a craft beer, but it was sort of an exotic thing. I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia, right? So we had, well, for instance, Schlitz was there. I remember the Schlitz Brewery was in Philadelphia. They had one there. I don't think maybe they're originally from Milwaukee, but I remember trying Moosehead. Remember Moosehead? That was from Canada. That was a fancy beer. You got Moosehead.
So funny because back then, like those were just big breweries, kind of branding. I think they were just kind of wanted you to think it was fancy and different, but it was probably no different than a Budweiser, you know.
It probably wasn't. But I mean, yeah, I mean, look, those beers are gonna, you know, they're gonna keep you going. I mean, they're keeping the beer business going, right? And then you well, you know, obviously where I'm from, the other big one was Yingling. Yeah, you know, which is the oldest brewery in the country, I think, right? Yeah. And you know, in Philly, it's just lager. If you order a lager, you're getting a Yingling.
Right.
But I mean, there's one that talks about that was just purely local when I was young, and now they've kind of blown up.
Oh yeah, they're huge now. And I love it. I think, you know, it's still like family owned, I think.
They are.
You know, I respect a lot of these big companies do good work and they give a lot back. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of like weird layers to the craft versus macro conversation. And you know, it's like we just don't want to be bullied around. We're independent craft breweries that are just trying to succeed and be passionate about what we want to do. And so we just look at the big guys and say, don't fuck with us. Like, you know, just let us do our thing and don't start making distribution and pricing. I mean, there's just all this crazy shit that they've tried.
All right, but somewhere in the dark recesses of your brain, do you ever have that idea that looking forward 10 years and one of the big boys comes to you and says, hey, we're going to throw you $200 million for your beer?
It's, you know, of course it's crossed my mind. And then you look at Ballast, then you look at Ballast Point and they sold for $1 billion, you know? So it's like, what is that number? It'd be, you know, it'd be hard to say no to $1 billion. Right. But you know, would I say yes to $200 million for our company in 10 years? I don't know. You know, for me, it's I'm extremely passionate about what we've created, and I care a lot about it. And you know, at that point, it becomes more of a personal thing. Like, where do I want to be with my personal wealth in 10 years? And
it depends on how fucking LA you get when you move here.
Yeah,
because if you become too LA and you're like, somebody offers you $1 billion, you might be like, yeah, you know what? That's courtside at the Lakers, and I can get a house in Beverly. Yeah, all right, I'll take $1 billion. No, I hope you don't. I hope that you stay at the helm of this thing for a long time.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the only way. I think it's not the only way to be successful, to become financially, you know, where you want to be. So we'll see. I will say we have no plans to sell
anytime soon. David, where do people find the beer? I mean, can you get it outside of Georgia right now?
Not yet. So we've done a good job of staying, you know, as close to home as possible. You know, the local aspect of craft beer is so important. So next year we're going to be producing over 70,000 barrels. So we're definitely in the top 100 breweries as far as like size and amount of liquid we make. But we're one of, I mean, we might be like in the top three as far as, you know, how much beer we sell within the least amount of states. So it's a shitload of beer to sell in one state. And anyway, the only place you can get our beer is in Georgia. And
until next summer.
Until next summer, yeah.
And then you just go to Joe Russo's production offices and knock on the door and say, hey, Joe. Oh, no, I'm downstairs. Downstairs. Yeah. All right, yeah. Don't go upstairs. They don't want you up there. Well, listen, man, this has been, I've enjoyed talking with you, and I've enjoyed drinking the beer. It's Creature Comforts Brewing Company. David Stein joining us from Athens, Georgia. If you're in Georgia, throw your mask on and get in there and try some of the beer. And then next summer in Los Angeles, I hope to be tipping one back with you in person, my friend.
I look forward to it, man. I'll visit you on Venice Beach and, you know, if there was a time machine, I think the one thing I would choose to do would be go back in time and hang out with you and Hunter S. Thompson, man. I was reading about your life, and man, it sounds like you've had a cool life, my friend.
It's been all right, man. The Hunter days, Jesus, how long has it been now? Geez, it's been dead 15 years. It's crazy.
Yeah.
15 years. Yes, we definitely had. And by the way, there was one of the, speaking of Hunter, so Flying Dog started in Aspen. The very first party. So Ralph Steadman is the artist who illustrated Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, a lot of other Hunter stuff. Ralph did the labels for, and I have a bottle somewhere in a box somewhere. I have one of the original bottles from the original case. And the label said, good beer, no shit, which I don't think ever actually made it to the final version. I don't, they wouldn't approve that, right? Like the TTB would approve that. But the original labels that they printed up on that first kid said, good beer, no shit. Ralph did the labels, and Ralph signed the bottle for me. And I have that bottle of beer somewhere in a box somewhere. That bottle is sitting from the original case of Flying Dog. And
that's cool.
I'll find it when you get out here, man. I will find it. And it's not open, by the way. This is an unopened bottle. I don't know how long does beer last.
Don't even open it, man.
Yeah, that's, just leave it. Yeah.
Yeah. Beer. Yeah. That's one of those things. You just keep it closed. But yeah, we'll go on a treasure hunt. Try to find that photo of Hunter that you didn't take from his kitchen. Right.
You heard that story, huh? Yeah, that was the picture of him and John Belushi. And when you get out here, there's a bar friends of mine own called Lono, which is named after the Curse of Lono. And it's right at Hollywood and Highland area up there. And they've got a ton of Hunter memorabilia. So when you get out and everything opens back up again, we'll be sure to go there and we'll have some drinks. And in the meantime, my friend, I wish you the best of luck. The beer is fantastic. Creature Comforts, everybody go check it out online. You can only get it in Georgia now, but trust me on this. It's coming your way sooner rather than later. So,
yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate so much.
Thank you, David. Mm-hmm.